creating the fifth segment increase on the streetcar. As you've heard today, each of those segments have been built on time and on budget. Four of the five projects had carryover on the contingency funds to future projects or return money to the funders. We now have 3 million people plus riding it a year. Over 10 million, I think now probably 11 million people have ridden it. We've never had a single safety incident of record. So it's been safe. It's been reliable. The equipment that we've purchased from the Czech Republic has proven to be extremely sound and reliable. The management of the project has been sound. It's caused no embarrassment to the city and no embarrassment to those of us on the PSI board. But more importantly, from our point of view, it's been done in a professional and businesslike manner, delivering on our promises. The development, I think you've heard some, but I'll reiterate, the development along the corridor within a block of the streetcar is over $3 billion and counting at the moment. Over 50% of the development in the central city has been in that corridor, and we build out at FAR to about 92% against the average of about 45%. So we're helping achieve some of the density bonuses at the same time reducing reliance on the automobile. In that context, briefly, I'd like to say that I've insisted that we do a study on the carbon footprint of this project because I think it's the untold story. 3 million rides not taken in an automobile. It's an electric project, obviously. And I think the carbon footprint issue is something we're new to, but I think it would be dramatic in this case, and I look forward to those numbers. We've achieved 6,000 units of housing, certainly hundreds, if not thousands, of new jobs. The Pearl District Business Association, which had it been formed 10 years ago, would have had three members, probably myself and the brewery and one other. Now has 260 members. Over 90% are locally owned and locally run businesses. And that's just in the Pearl. We're now seeing new excitement and new development on the West End, certainly around Portland State and, of course, in South Waterfront. So the LID experience we've had, I chaired the original LID. I went to people and said, you can have two things here. If you go to the beach for a week and come back, you'll have a streetcar in front of your property, i.e. the build-outs are modest and low impact. And I said, your property will be worth twice as much as it was the day you left. I was wrong on one account. Property probably turned out to be worth four times as much as the day you left. Certainly the appreciation and value along the streetcar has been dramatic. It brings 3 million customers, eyeballs, onto your business. I think the impacts are clear. I urge your support of the LID. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And now we have one more testifier, Dick Cooley.
My name is Dick Cooley. I'm a property owner in the Lloyd District and a member of the Portland Streetcar Board. I'll be very brief. I support the streetcar because I think it's a tremendous investment for me as a property owner. $150 million will be invested in the system, and 85% of it will be paid for by people other than the property owners, the other 15% by the, or 10% by the property owners, 90% by others. And as a property owner, that's a tremendously leveraged deal for me. It's clear, it's proven that the value of the property is going to go up. As a result of this, it's going to cost me 0.5% of the value of my property as an investment. I'll get that back in 6 months. I get it financed. I don't pay for it until the day that the product is delivered. So it's just a tremendous investment from a business standpoint. I think there's a couple of other really good reasons. One is the connection it makes between the east and west side, and I think the other is it further establishes Portland as at the forefront of transportation systems. It's creating a loop that's going to allow for radials when there's just a line there now, and we're getting in the business of building streetcars in this state too, partly as a result of this project. All of those things I think really are wonderful, and so I support the
Thank you. Maybe to follow up on the gentleman's concern from industrial property, very fair questions. I would add to the response that has already been given by members of the stakeholders and the public that this project actually is one of a select number of projects in the Central East Side Industrial District that actually would produce increment that could then, the proceeds of which can then be used on any project in the Central East Side. And not all the budgeted projects within the Central East Side Tax Increment District actually produce increment like the streetcar is estimated to do and has been proven to do in other tax increment districts around the city. I think that the other benefit, Chris mentioned increased opportunities for affordable transit for the workforce. I think on the EXD zoning, I think Michael or somebody mentioned, the number of housing units that can be built with existing zoning are significant. And we will have, if we can match that with the resources, then we can have workforce housing, which the adjacency, the close adjacency of both the industrial and the workforce housing would be unique within the city. With this project does come additional investment in transportation control, lights and signals that should improve the throughput in the neighborhood. And with EXD that we've focused the alignment on, will come more services that will make it an even more attractive place for workers and business owners in the Central East Side. So I appreciate all the testimony today. And back to you, Mayor.
Further discussion? It's not an emergency. Moves to a second reading. Please read the 11:15 a.m. time certain.
The amendments
today? Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, the amendment. You do have an amendment.
My mistake. I move the amendment from Vicki Deedy's memo dated August 15th.
I hear a second?
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Salzman. Is gone. Potter.
Aye.
Moves to a second reading. Please read the 11:15 time certain.
Establish code to regulate sales of graffiti materials.
Commissioner Leonard.
Thank you. This is a second reading, but in going over the ordinance since last week, I want to hand out an amendment and provide copies for the audience that will need to be amended into the ordinance, and it isn't a insignificant change, although it was a mistake in the drafting by the city attorney. And the change says a tube, marker, or other pen-like instrument with a tip of 1/4 inch in diameter or less. It should have said greater, which has a substantially different impact, that contains paint or similar fluid and internal paint agitator. I'd like to move the amendment.
Second.
Call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye.
And that'll move consideration of this to another hearing because of the change.
Pardon?
We can't actually vote on it today now because of this amendment.
You move to another.
Well, I mean, we'll have the testimony as we plan today, but we can't vote on it today because of the amendment.
Okay. Do we have folks signed up to testify on this matter?
Do I have the amendment? Or
did he get a copy of the amendment?
Who's
here?
It was an error on the part of the city attorney, but it wasn't an insignificant error. It was actually the substance of the change is quite significant.
We already voted.
Do we have a sign-up sheet?
We do. And we have 6 people signed up to speak.
Okay.
Let me call the first 3, Andrea Pearson, John Lambert, Ty Baxter.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes.
Hi there. I'm Andrea Pearson, and I'm representing Division Hardware, which is a Southeast Portland hardware store that sells these products. And when it comes to this ordinance, at Division Hardware, we oppose it. We feel that as a retailer, we should not be responsible for the time and the expense it would take to keep track of the people who buys these products and, like, how we would keep track of it. And in order to, like, contain it, we would have to buy more products. And we feel that we understand the problem, that we feel that there needs to be action taken, but we don't think this should be on the expense and time of the retailer.
Hello, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. I am John Lambert. I'm from Division Hardware. I represent my dad, who would like to be here today. His name is Glenn Lambert. I'm John. I'm the owner's son. I am representing the management. Mr. Leonard, you had a wanted to bring up issues with, like, zip ties, duct tape, paintbrushes, and now it's spray paint. So moving on with that, I believe that this would decrease the sales on spray paint if we did lock them up, make people show ID for them. I believe, or how we're kind of managing the spray paint issue now is we're not really selling to people under the age of 18. And what we do get tagged on our building often. What we've done is we've taken pictures with our digital camera and then sent them into Officer Miller, and as well as his assistant, and they've been more than happy to look into the issue. I really don't see any incentive to us either than just making making our building maybe a little bit cleaner or stuff like that, maybe a little bit less work for us. But if there's any other incentive to that, I'd like to see that if we really did have to go forward with this. It's a lot of red tape making people sign things, kind of like the methamphetamine problem that is now cleaned up and being controlled. I'm perfectly fine with because that is, again, a controlled substance, but this really isn't a controlled substance. And our manager of Division Hardware couldn't be here today, Ron McDonald. He stated in the Oregonian that what if people get spray paint stolen from them? Then you have that problem. Or and they use it to spray paint the building. Or if they have something downstairs in their little shelf downstairs in their little shop at home, they can just go out and do that. There are many problems with that, not just purchasing it from a retail location. And I guess, what was the fine that you said for the first offense if this did go through? Like around $5,000 or so. That I think that alone is way too steep for the problems to be solved that way. That money should be set aside or something like that so that we can have more graffiti patrol or gang patrol. And I think our chief of police has done a really nice job since the time that she's been here helping out the city kind of be better. And I can see that it has improved substantially since she has been here. And I know that Mr. Leonard is up for re-election, and this will be one thing that myself as a voter I'll be looking at when he is up for re-election. So I know, Mr. Leonard, you have done many things, good things for this city, and I appreciate the things that you have done. I just think this is one more thing that you need to get your hands off of, along with the duct tape issue. I think it's just a little bit crazy to think about it at this time.
Hi, my name is Ty Baxter. I'm here representing my family-owned business, Baxter Auto Parts. I became aware of this hearing yesterday, so I apologize about not being 100% prepared for this. I think the idea of getting graffiti controlled is very important. I've traveled around a lot, and it's a scar on our beautiful cities we have in this country of ours. But as a business such as ourselves, it's a little more of an intimate business. It's not a big box store. We have more people out on the floors and what have you. Our stance on this is that this is a bad move for a business such as ourselves. Number one, there's going to be a cost involved per store. Right now, we have 5 stores with a Portland address, 5 in the metro area. And I just did a rough math here of about $2,000 per store. And that doesn't sound like big money to maybe a big box store, but to a company like ours, that's a little bit of work there. Also, the tracking issue. Our stores, we employ oftentimes part-time high school kids during the evenings, and sometimes they might not be as familiar with how the world works and how to work with people as we are. So I hate to put them in a position to make them be the law, to get the identification to say who can and can't buy paint if one of the more experienced people in our stores isn't available for that. That's something I have an issue with there. The other thing, looking at a couple of the cans of paint there, you're asking for us to write down serial numbers, I think it said on this piece of paper I got. And they're batch numbers, so I don't know if that's really an accurate way to track it also. We would have some other issues involved in our businesses. We have wholesale customers that we deliver case quantities to and things like that. Boy, they'll have a lot of guys in their facilities, and we're going to be ultimately responsible for a lot more people than just someone buying a can of spray paint retail. It is going to knock down the amount of sales we have a little bit there. If you come in and see one of our business, our stores, our Baxter Auto Parts stores, which you're more than welcome, you can see how people will come in and purchase more than one can of paint, and that's going to affect our bottom dollar, our bottom line a little bit there. And I think that's about all I have to say. Thank you for hearing me.
You start. Well, we heard some testimony last week about shoplifting being a primary source of obtaining spray paint. I'm just curious if your stores have had that experience.
It has, for sure, especially since our spray paint's kind of close to the door. So we've been trying to, like, keep an eye. We've put actually a security camera on it, and we've just been keeping an eye closer on it. But it has been.
And we've slowed that down personally at our store.
But it has been. It is a.
Yeah, it is a problem.
It is being shoplifted.
Definitely.
For our stores, it's not a huge issue. We have turnstiles, one-way turnstiles, so it's kind of a roundabout way to get it out. And we do that to direct the flow of sales, not for theft prevention. But we don't have a huge problem in our stores on that, so I think it's going to be a neighborhood-to-neighborhood thing. One of our stores potentially might be a little bit worse than the other because of the neighborhood it's in, but we haven't noticed that as being a big problem from the retail store.
The other thing... I think Commissioner Adams brought up the point in 1998, I guess Mayor Vera Katz voluntarily asked stores, including, I assume, all of you, to put spray paint behind the counter. You recall that? And was it just something you decided not to do?
I recall something. I hear we got a letter or something like that, really didn't take much into it. We did, how Andrea said, we did put camera on it. We did, that's when we kind of said no people under 18, stuff like that, but yeah.
So you don't sell to under 18? Is that
what More or less, no.
Unless they have like a parent.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. And just to follow up on that, are you familiar with the responsible retailer program that Commissioner Saltzman alluded to, and do you know if you're following its provisions? No. So in 1998, Mayor Katz and the Police Bureau and ONI undertook a comprehensive effort at trying to address the issue of graffiti, both preventing it, enforcing the laws, and cleaning it up as quickly as possible. And part of that was a discussion with the retail industry. And she contemplated a very similar ordinance to this at that time, and there was a lot of pushback from the retail industry that would be affected. and settled on a voluntary program called the Responsible Retailer Program. So my sort of knowledge of this issue and tracking of this issue goes back a number of years, and I think that that initial effort failed. And one of the reasons that I'm looking to support this effort is that I would treat everyone more uniformly, I think make it clear that these are the expectations. Now, is it the panacea? I don't think that Commissioner Leonard is promoting this as a panacea to the issue, but as a step in a series of other steps that we need to take on the issue. And, I do appreciate that it would potentially have some hardship on you and potentially affect your sales, and we're trying to strike that balance, and I'm a big fan of, I've been in both of your, some of your locations, and I've been in your store. We're trying to strike that balance between letting you be as successful as you can be, free of regulation, but also trying to keep the community as graffiti-free as possible. I was wondering if you had any comment on my observation.
I think there's a better way to do that without going after retail business. I mean, if we left Portland, what would you guys have? You guys have no city. You just have people. And I know the property taxes is what's your main income for Portland. But, I mean, the business, people have to go to their store, to our stores, and so that they can get the products to survive. I mean, you guys aren't going to sell those products, I mean, to people. And I think that if you're hurting us, you're ultimately hurting the people who are paying taxes towards for the city and state and federal.
Wouldn't you like to have all retailers doing the same kind of responsible efforts that you are? I mean, right now we have retailers that are not making the effort that you are.
Right.
To address this issue,
now,
and that puts
I
you
think
at a,
it's
that
kind
also
of different.
Puts you at a competitive disadvantage.
Okay, I think it's kind of different for us. I don't know if anybody from like Home Depot or from Myers is here, but and I'm sure I guess it would still affect them as well.
It would affect
okay
everyone
everybody.
Who's,
so. Well, I it's still a lot of red tape. I mean, if we. We're given money or something like that so that we can kind of promote the and we can feel like we're still welcomed to put up, you know, lock cases and whatnot on that, then we probably would have less of a problem with it. But this is our stance now since
I appreciate your input.
Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
We have three more, Michael Nelson, Lois Hankins, and then the individual from APNBA.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes.
Good afternoon. My name is Michael Nelson. I represent Park Rose Hardware. After reading the council's proposed ordinance, I understand the council's frustration. Indeed, we've been victims of criminal activity on our own properties. With that in mind, I applaud the council's willingness to address this problem, but we respectfully take issue with the council's proposal of shifting the responsibility for the crime from the criminal, where the responsibility lies, and shifting it to the retailer, who has nothing to do with the crime being committed. As a long-term business that has been serving the peoples of Portland for more than 38 years, we sell tens of thousands of dollars of spray paint a year. As a responsible business, we do not sell spray paint to individuals younger than 18 years of age. Not only do we do this with spray paint, but strictly limit the sale of other products used for the production of illegal substances, such as meth. We take our responsibility to our community seriously. This is why we oppose this proposed ordinance so strongly. to modify 40 feet of counter space in our stores will cost us thousands of dollars. The labor requirement to change out the counters, stock products in locked cases, and keep all these records will incur ongoing costs of thousands of dollars. If one of the 100 or so employees that work for us does not fill out a form correctly, our business is subject to a $5,000 fine. This is all bad, but that's not the worst thing. Resentment that our business will face from our legitimate customers that resent the additional government intrusion in their private lives for the purchase of a can of spray paint is the worst thing that we have to deal with. We respectfully propose that you pass ordinances that punish the criminals that do the crime in our communities and not shift this punitive ordinance to businesses that already work in a difficult and challenging business environment. I'm grateful for the chance to speak before you today. Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Lois Hankins. I have two hardware stores in Portland, one in Southeast and one in Northeast. I'm a responsible retailer. When they ask us to do something about it before we rearranged our paint departments, we have all of our spray paints in line of sight of our front counter clerks. We do not sell to people under 18, and we front it every morning so that we know if there's any shoplifting. We do not have an accountable amount of shoplifting in that area at all. I worked in a retail store for 22 years where we had to keep track of ammo that was sold for guns and for gun sales. Gun sales, we did have problems once in a while. They did come back and check our books. With ammo, in the 22 years, I can remember two cases that they checked. Neither one of them could they bring it as evidence because there was no proof that those shells came out of that box that they purchased. And the same problem would be with the spray paint, whereas lots and batch numbers are for thousands of cans of spray paint, not to identify an individual can of paint. I feel that also that we are being blamed for something that's not our responsibility. I, too, have spent hours cleaning up graffiti. When I was on the building, at least a building next door, I was out there every morning with my paint. Thankfully, now I sit back in a lawn, and they don't bother to get back to my store. I think it takes too much effort, and there are other places that it would stand out more. But I feel I'd like to see the people that are guilty doing it being punished, and please take us into account when you decide on this. Thank you.
I am actually reading two letters that I received from people who had been informed of this. The first one is from Uptown Hardware, who does business as Pearl Hardware and as Woodstock Hardware. So he's in Northwest and Southeast. And he writes, "We have come to the conclusion that there is really no way to calculate exactly how much time or money it would take to lock up our graffiti supplies. These items that are being targeted as problems are used every day by hundreds of builders, property managers, and homeowners in this city. The consumer inconvenience would be equal to or greater than my own, and that is my first concern. If and when such a policy takes effect, I question its ability to effectively track those that are actually doing the graffiti. How does a name, phone number, and address indicate a guilty party or a person of interest? It is our company policy to question questionable spray paint purchases, such as a person under the age of 18 buying outrageous quantities. We have gone so far as to request letters from parents in such situations, and that alone has deterred many. The problem here is obvious. As a business owner and building owner in Portland, there is nothing more aggravating than having someone deface our property and cost us time and money to clean up the mess. It has always been our priority to cover the graffiti as soon as possible in order to discourage further problems. This theory has worked for us. However, the problem tends to move down the block to the next building. I don't know the perfect solution to this problem, but this proposal is not the answer for many reasons beyond the cost and time issue. If someone were to present me with a piece of software that is compatible with my existing point-of-sale software that tracks identification and does not create confusion and extensive time for the consumer, I would be open to discussion. It would be my suggestion to the City Council that we spend more time and money on educating our youth and giving them incentive to do something more creative with their time than defacing the city they live in. The problem starts at home and not in my hardware store." The other one is from Peter Rossing, who sells art supplies, Muse Art and Design. He writes, I constantly see the effects of tagging all around town, and I feel strongly that this is a problem that warrants the attention, cooperation, and participation of business people. I have made the decision at my business not to stock several products that might be used for tagging. These include spray paints and oil-based paint markers. I have, however, ordered these products as special order items for customers that I have gotten to know or whose work I am familiar with. I realize this method is easier for a small business than for a large one, but I see it as an opportunity to provide personalized service rather than viewing it as a restriction on my sales. If I do decide to stock products such as spray paints in the future, I would definitely keep them locked up as a safeguard against tagging as well as against theft, since this type of product in the art materials industry tends to be much higher priced. He would like a specific list of affected items, particularly as it relates to permanent markers, e.g. oil-based paint markers versus acrylic versus fine tip versus, there are a lot of products, and I guess there was actually a short list of the usual suspects. I am not familiar with the policies being proposed, but if they include stiffer penalties for business owners who do not promptly clean up tagging, I am also strongly in favor of that. In my own experience, it only takes a few minutes to paint over tagging, and doing so seems to be a strong deterrent. One more thought. There is growing interest, especially among younger people, in legitimate graffiti art. Whenever possible, I think it is important to distinguish between graffiti as a style of art and tagging as a form of vandalism. We cannot, as a community, profess the importance of arts and creativity while we simultaneously marginalize art forms that do not fit with a comfortable aesthetic. Peter Muse, Muse Art and Design on Hawthorne. Thank you.
Now, I have a question. You represent the APNBA, correct?
Right.
Were you or your members contacted in regards to the crafting of this ordinance?
No, I got it the same day I sent it out to all the hardware stores. I got a notice from Jackie Babicki from the Small Business Advisory Council asking me if we knew about this, and I had not. I'm sorry, I missed the entire first meeting that you had.
Have you folks consulted?
No.
Thank you.
So before you all leave, I would like to ask Officer Miller to come up and respond to some of what was said, and maybe Marsha as well. But I was in communication with Division Hardware in the crafting of the ordinance, heard these objections early on. And I appreciate that each person who testified today talked about voluntarily not selling to people under 18. That's commendable. And instinctively, intuitively, I guess would be a better way to put it, when I started crafting this, one of the first things I thought we needed to have in the ordinance was a prohibition to sell spray paint graffiti materials to people under 18. What I learned a year ago as I started drafting this was that's not the problem, believe it or not. It isn't people under 18 that are the problem. It's actually the age range, which you'll hear in a second, 18 to 30. So it is people coming in that are over the age of 18, and yes, they do shoplift, which is a problem, so I appreciate what Division Hardware has done to try to address that. But they also just purchase it and leave. And I hope you can stay and hear the folks on the front line that are having to deal with this, what is really a epidemic, particularly in some parts of Portland.
I would just say that specifically 80% of the graffiti we see here in the city is committed by adults between the age of 18 and 30. And I look at this ordinance as a small part of a bigger picture. Of course, it's not the end-all of ordinances to stop the graffiti problem. But the majority of these guys go into these stores and they steal the paint, and it's an easy way for them to get a hold of it. My feeling is that the ordinance is going to act as more of a deterrent to these guys who are going into the stores to purchase the paint to commit illegal acts. I don't think that those guys want to come in and write their name down and identify themselves, and I think it's going to deter them. And I think it will affect sales of paint at all of these retail stores, but it's going to affect their sales because those are the people that primarily we don't want to purchase the paint anyway. The legitimate customers that are buying the paint for legitimate reasons, I think, will still go. This problem that we have here in the city is something that we all have to work together to solve. It can't be handled alone by the Portland Police Bureau or the Graffiti Abatement Office. We have to work together. Some concessions have to be made by everybody, and I know it places an incredible hardship on our tax-paying business owners, but I think it's going to have an effect. And I think if we work together with the business owners, I think that we'll see that there will be a decrease in the amount of crimes, graffiti-related crimes we have here in the city.
Go ahead. I was just curious. We heard testimony about requiring serial numbers and lot numbers. I guess I'm surprised spray paint has serial numbers. what is the thinking around that?
I would have to divert that question to Commissioner Leonard because I'm not totally familiar with all of the aspects.
Marcia, do you want to address that?
Well, I just looked at the ordinance, the copy that I had of the proposed ordinance, and it doesn't say serial numbers. It does say lot numbers, and I don't know how effective that would be because it sounds like lot numbers. I don't think we can trace that one lot number goes to one store. It sounds like they go to lots of stores,
right.
So I'm not sure.
It gives us the ability, it's the means by which, and it's language, frankly, we adopted from other communities that have found it effective to trace back where the paint came from and narrow down who sold it.
From a can or from paint
a can.
Itself?
From a
but
can
there's nothing
and
that
the
says
paint.
Serial numbers.
And the paint. They can actually analyze the paint and determine where it came from.
So serial numbers, there's none.
Okay. Serial numbers is not part of the language.
Which one of you folks last time we heard this talked about the fact that the majority of spray paint is bought over the internet?
That was one of the people from the graffiti abatement cleanup crews. I think that was their perception.
And what's your perception, officer?
That's not my perception. In fact, the stack of reports I have on my desk now, which is about 80, at least four of those reports, officers were able to find evidence like receipts from local businesses where the graffiti was purchased legitimately. And in two of the cases, the suspects admitted that they stole the paint from various stores. So I think it's going to make it extremely difficult for these guys to get the paint here. And it's my desire to, and I hope to, if this ordinance passes, I want to meet with city officials from the other surrounding cities, and I would encourage them to adopt the same ordinance so that in a way we can create a small circle or safety zone where it would make it extremely difficult for these guys to leave the city of Portland and go to the city of Beaverton and get the paint. I think it would be beneficial to all the cities to enact it.
And last, for the council's information, last week I alluded to doing the same thing for the same reason and have since met with a member of the Gresham City Council who plans to introduce this upon passage in Portland and then carry it to, apparently there's a meeting she goes to regularly that is suburban cities surrounding Portland that abut Portland that she will take that to, and I will go with her and ask all of the cities to adopt the same ordinance. She felt very much as you do that this was an unfortunate but necessary step to take.
And we hope to gain additional support at some point in time, additional resources to also battle the problem, not just the ordinance itself, but other things that we can do in a creative fashion at the Bureau and at the abatement level to try to continue to do things to battle the problem, to get a handle on it.
Thank you.
I guess just an answer, adding on to what Matt said about the online supplies of graffiti materials. There is an online industry in sales of graffiti materials. Those things are, many of those things come from Europe, specialized spray paints and things, and they're extremely expensive. I'm sure some of them are being used, but I think the majority, based on particularly what the police are finding when they interview these vandals when they're arrested, is that it's either purchased locally or it's shoplifted.
Thanks, folks.
Thank you.
Is that it? Okay, and so it moves to a second reading?
Yes.
I would like to have it read early September. Would that be okay?
It would not be okay. It's going to be on the vacation. August 29th calendar, and that will have been the third time, and I have planned on it being voted on then.
So you won't make it a few extra days?
I will not.
I would move that this be heard on the first Wednesday in September.
I'll second that because I also won't be here on the 29th.
Is Commissioner Adams here?
Yes, he is.
I've moved and it's been seconded to have this hearing in the first week of September.
And I've opposed it. It's scheduled to be on the August 29th calendar, and I'd like to have it heard and voted on then.
And the reason for September is?
Because I'll be gone for 2 weeks. Commissioner Adams will be gone that day. I mean, Commissioner Saltzman. Thank you.
And you'd like to get it done as soon as possible?
It needs to get done and implemented. This has already moved to a third week, and we want to get it implemented.
Call the vote.
Adams.
So I'm voting on exactly what, Sue?
To have the second reading on September 5th.
No.
Leonard?
No.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
So now what?
So it moves to the 29th?
29th.
Oh, that's the automatic date. Okay.
Okay, we move to the regular agenda. I have an excused absence from council at 12:45. Would it be okay with the council members to have the emergency votes heard first?
Sure.
Please read item 1007.
1007, authorized grant to Black Parent Initiative to support current and future programs.
This is an emergency.
Yes. Thank you for being here. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Mayor and City Council. Firstly, want to thank you all for this opportunity again for coming to come before you. About 2 years ago, I've heard about a tradition here at City Council where we asked the question, what about the children? But today I want us to sort of take a step back and take a deep breath and ask yet another question, what about the families? In Portland, we know that just about 43% of our African-American kids are graduating from Portland Public Schools each year. We know that we are having, as we talk about gentrification and changing the economy, we know that there are a lot of things that are being hit, especially our communities of color. About 2 years ago, Jonelle and I, sitting here, asked ourselves this question, what about the family? And we created what is now the Black Parent Initiative. The Black Parent Initiative focuses on two areas, primary areas, as of now, and that's tutorial assistance, which is done by Concordia University, and that's where twice a week students from Concordia go into African-American churches. We're partnering with 11 churches over the next year, and they tutor students, and they work with them to, and they're getting cultural competency training through the Northwest Regional Laboratories to really work to develop students' competency and students to feel more comfortable. Last year, we had everything from students getting help with college applications and students getting help with that tough subject and coming back and showing that A paper. So that was a wonderful partnership with Concordia. And we're also talking about leadership development. We've done a partnership with MACG, Metropolitan Alliance for Common Good, which talks quite a bit about power dynamics. And so we're going into these churches, and we're talking about how do we build parents and how do we help build parents and their individual stories and their individual voices so that a year from now, 6 months from now, these parents can sit in this seat and they can express to you the need in the community not only for more transparent but for more servanthood leadership. One of the things that we've been very, very clear about from day one is that this what we're trying to build is not build our names or build our images in this community, but really to build the parents and the voices and to help to act ultimately close the educational achievement gap. There's a ton of research. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation just did a huge piece around adult parental engagement and the effects of parental engagement, especially on low-income and children of color. And so the $100,000 grant will be going to more supporting a noble cause, will be going to support the development and the institutional building of our African-American community in a different way.
Thank you, Charles. Mayor, members of the City Council, John L. Bell, Secretary of the Black Parent Initiative organization. It's a pleasure to be here with you all today in support of this grant. Just to sort of give you a synopsis of where we stand on behalf of the Board of Directors, is this is certainly a huge piece of importance for us for a number of reasons, one of which is this grant will help to build leadership capacity of parents to become active participants in their child's education in school. We often know that, you know, to be engaged in your kid's education, to be active in the PTA and others, all play a role in terms of the success. But the question becomes, why aren't African-American parents traditionally engaged? A lot of it speaks to culturally specific services. A lot of it speaks to how we are really outreaching to those parents and providing avenues for their engagement. And so really what our goal here is to have opportunities to utilize the church, which is a historical mechanism for African-American engagement and leadership. And so it's really captivating on that relationship. It's not teaching doctrine, but it's really utilizing those capacities that's historic. The other piece is this funding will help to leverage other sources, both public and private. So we really see the City of Portland's grant as a leveraging tool, not the be-all, end-all, but really a leveraging tool to have conversations with private foundations as well as other organizations. So on behalf of the Board of Directors, we're really in support of this and want to thank the mayor specifically in his office for helping us develop this proposal.
Questions? I had a question, too. I think it sounds really promising. The part I just wanted to hear you expand upon is the notion of teaching leaders. To what extent, because this is just a one-time grant, to what extent do you foresee being able to teach parent leaders that can then go on and be available to teach other parents?
So what we are doing is partnering with 11 churches, we essentially go into a church, we start what's called a parent network, which essentially, simplest way, is a PTA. And before we do that, we go through leadership development, looking at, so what is a leader, sort of how, what's power dynamic, who are the players out there in the education field, but really also speaking to what are our interests. Because we understand and we believe as an organization, and really has been made clear to us in the last year, that a lot of our parents, I've never met a parent who said, I want my child to be a drug dealer, I want my child to end up hopeless in the street. But a lot of parents, especially from low-income and distressed communities, do not have the opportunity to volunteer 3-4 hours at the school. And they do not, because of the mitigating issues in their lives, they do not because of the other pressing issues. And so going to the church side and building this relationship and doing it with a small with a cadre of parents, 10 to 15 parents, who then will start to really build and say, what are the barriers to my engagement in my child's education at the church site? And then using the church institution to really start to build a movement and say, okay, at one church last year, parents said it was adult literacy. And so they went out and they created a partnership with PCC in which they started to get tutoring through PCC, learning how to read. How can I teach my child to read? How can I tell my child to read if I can't read? And so building that is what we hope to do, but really taking a gradual approach and being extremely methodical and holistic in our thought and in how we do the work.
Commissioner Adams, just to answer your question and add on to what Charles just mentioned, we believe the leadership potential is there. When we first did this pilot study, we worked with Adam Davis and some focus group, and one of the things that we found out early on is parents wanted to be engaged, but the way of that engagement, both through school and other avenues, was not conducive to their engagement. We had a couple of parents say, you know, I want to be engaged. I've never been asked. Or when I show up to the school reception, I'm not greeted with a friendly atmosphere. And so really what we're doing is utilizing places where folks are comfortable, which is the church, and to really captivate on that leadership potential and develop that and cultivate that.
So my question is, since this is just one-time money, you have it once, it goes away, the lasting benefits of training trainers is built into this? I just wanted to.
Our hope is to be back here in 6 months or so and to really present to council and to explore from there. We're getting funding currently from the district as well as individual philanthropists.
And so you might be back to ask for more money.
We just might be. It depends. Just maybe.
Well, further than that.
I'm just thick-headed this morning. All right.
Yeah, further than that, you know, Concordia University has added a lot of leveraging. We foresee this program. One of the things, and Charles and I talked about this going in, is we weren't interested in another fly-by nonprofit because I think that does a disservice to a lot of kids and a lot of parents who depend on those services. You have it today and you don't have it tomorrow. And so really what we're building, we're being very methodical in terms of the approach, in terms of how we built this. We're asking for funding from private sources over a period of a few years, not just one. This going into the city of Portland, we wanted to first show you what we're going to be able to accomplish and then come back and have a deeper conversation.
So there is a nonprofit that's been created, though?
Miller Nash Law Firm is they're helping us do going through our nonprofit process, and we are incorporating the state of Oregon, and we are waiting to hear back from the IRS. And so we have a Concordia University and their CPA, Denny Stecklin. They're helping us do our stuff as of now.
Right. Further questions? Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Was anybody signed up to testify on this matter? Okay. Have to wait for Commissioner Leonard to come back, then we'll take a vote since it's emergency. So please hear the next emergency vote, which is item.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Item 10-11.
Item 10-11, authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding process to the Bureau of Purchases pursuant to ORS 279C and City Code 5.34 and provide payment for construction of the South Park Block 5 project.
Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Mayor Potter, members of City Council. I'm Jeff Barham, the Director of the Bureau of Purchases. And before you is a request to authorize an exemption from the competitive low bidding process for the South Park Block 5 project on behalf of Portland Parks and Recreation. And under Oregon law, we're required to come before you to get an exemption from the traditional low bid process, of which we've made the findings which are attached in Exhibit A. Primarily, we have to show that it will not diminish competition, and because of that, we're going to do a competitive request for proposal process in order to select the contractor to perform the work, and then it will also show substantial cost savings. And those findings are attached in the packet of material that you should have before you. So with that, I'll just pause. I know we're going long, and if you have any questions about the process, glad to answer them, and also have representatives from Park here too.
Question?
So back when Mayor Katz was part of her team that worked on this, if I recall correctly, the estimated cost of the park at that time, the cap of the park, assuming the garage below, was $2 million. And now I see here that it's estimated at 4.5, and just wanted to air out the difference in the price.
Robin Grimwade, Parks Bureau. That's correct, Commissioner Adams. The original price was $2.1 million, and at the public involvement process, as a result of that process, the public said, we are looking for more than just a routine sort of neighborhood-style park. We want a truly significant park. It's a signature park. It's in the context of Pioneer Courthouse Square, and that necessitated us to relook at the budget and to secure alternative sources of funding. And our project manager can explain more on that if council requires.
And this is a low confidence estimate. You obviously, in the documents, you obviously make the case that given the 4.5 that you have with the low confidence estimate, that the CGMC is the best opportunity to achieve the public expectations for the park within the resources we have. Do you want to talk a little bit about why you think the CGMC is the best way to do that?
Certainly. My name is Allison Rouse with the Parks Bureau and the project manager for South Park Block 5. First, I'd like to correct one thing about the $2 million figure. That was the total project budget rather than just the construction cost. And because we're building on structure, this per square foot cost of constructing a park on structure meant that that budget would go not as far. And again, the public expressed clearly to us, as well as our steering committee in our process last year, that they wanted a signature park. So now we have arrived at a schematic design for that, and we...
I apologize, but at the time that we inked this deal way back when, are you saying that the structure underneath it was not contemplated?
No, I'm sorry, I misspoke. What I meant by that was that we knew that the structure was there, and the $2 million budget that we had would indeed build a park, but it would build a basic park rather than the more significant feature that the public had asked for. So we have arrived at a schematic design, and the challenges of building on structure and meeting the schedule of beginning construction after the garage is completed, and the difficulties of staging on such a tight downtown site, we think will require a contractor who has been involved while the documents, the construction documents, are being completed. And the CMGC arrangement would allow that.
Talk to me about the amount of money you see devoting to public art, the 2% for art requirements, and your hopeful desire to go beyond that.
We would like to go beyond that. Of course, we're still in the cost reconciliation phase of our project, but we will certainly meet the 2%, and we hope to make sure that the park has a significant art element. Again, that is in keeping with the expectations of the public process. How exactly it works out above the 2%, I can't say at this point.
And then I noticed in terms of who's on the selection committee, and this is if I recall correctly, this is a contract for both the parks and the right-of-way improvements, the same contractor, is that correct?
Yes, although the right-of-way improvements, we're still exploring the feasibility of that. So that is not a part of the $4.5 million.
So the sidewalks would be separate?
Correct.
Oh.
Correct. We're still exploring how that might be done and how that might be paid for.
Tell me more.
Well, we have a schematic design for that, and a multi-bureau coalition has come forward to say that we would like to fulfill the Park Avenue vision for this, which was a planning document adopted by council in 2004.
Midtown blocks?
Yeah, correct, correct. It was Park Avenue vision is another term for those same blocks, which called for a special street treatment, certainly at South Park Block 5, but hopefully also on those blocks between Salmon and Burnside. So we have begun the process of seeing what that might look like. But exactly how it gets implemented is still up in the air. We just, because the street right at South Park Block 5 is open due to construction of the garage, there's an opportunity that we would like to take advantage of to reconstruct that street to the special standard if it can be all hammered out in time before the park opens. And so this contractor needs to have expertise in building that sort of street and meeting the challenges of the traffic flow, et cetera. But that is, we have not yet begun to figure out how that would be implemented.
Do you at least have resources in the budget to replace the sidewalks, standard issue sidewalks, on what would it be, Alder and Yamhill?
It would just be the right-of-way at Park Avenue, and then to repair the little bit of the sidewalk that was damaged during construction at Yamhill and Taylor. And the builder of the garage is responsible for that, and they have bonded with the city and have a budget to repair that.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And just to add on to that, once we go through the contractor selection process through the evaluation phase, we will be back before you with a recommendation to award the contract, and I think we'll have some more of those details that you're asking for.
So the final price tag comes back to us?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody signed up for testimony?
I'm sorry, I haven't picked up the sheet. Is anyone here to sign to testify?
What sheet?
I'll get it.
Good morning, Mayor Potter.
Please take a seat.
Yes, Veronica Bernier, PSU, Community Health.
You have 3 minutes.
Okay, great. I'm familiar with the area that you addressed, and I support that plan to